May 18th, 2016, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. yeah.
It started with John Coltrane with Mel Jackson doing bebop.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Bags.
Yeah, man.
And then Superman Says, the Split Squad.
Right, Superman Says. Yeah, it's one of my side shows, you know. We're actually going to do a little van tour of Europe coming up.
Fall?
No, actually, it's right around middle of June. I got a couple of gigs, Blondie gigs, and then we're jumping on a plane and going to France with the Split Squad. And that, there's a guy called Keith Strain in that band from the Flesh Tones. And Eddie Munoz from a band from called Plimsolls.
Oh, yeah, basement.
Yeah, and our keyboard player, who unfortunately can't make it, he's busy because he's the organist at Fenway in Boston. So it's baseball season.
The Green Monster.
Yeah, right. Josh Cantor. And then the singer
is the guy, house.
He's the
organ
house,
man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so he plays a lot of, you know, out stuff there that people kind of catches people by surprise a lot.
Yeah.
He's got the, I was saying, you know, he's got the World Series ring from the other year when Boston won. Great guy.
Cool. And but he's indisposed.
He's indisposed. And then there's a guy called Mike Gibling. It's actually his project, and he's the bass player, singer. And, yeah, we're going to go drive around the van.
So Eddie don't play bass in his band?
Who's that?
Eddie Munoz.
No, Eddie plays guitar.
Hey,
Eddie played.
Another traitor.
He's a lead guitar player in the Plimsolls.
Well, he was. Okay.
Yeah. I was in
Who
a band.
Who was the bass man then?
Dave Pahoa.
That's
yeah,
it.
The surfer. Yeah, Dave.
Surfer man.
Great guy.
Luka Shells. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I was in a band with Eddie.
Because Eddie had a joke band too called Megadeth. I think.
Yeah.
They sold
did.
The name to this other guy who got kicked out of.
I did. Maybe.
That's what I heard.
He sold the name Megadeth. To
Minuteman had a weird gig where we played with the. What's that movie? They got the squeaky guy, Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, Spinal Tap.
They played a gig in that band, and they're wearing wigs and shit.
Oh, yeah.
But Minuteman, we thought it was just a regular gig.
Oh.
It was kind of joke night. And it ended up, because we come out there, first note of the first song, we both break strings and we have to stop.
Right. Yeah,
it was called the Music Machine on Pico there.
Yeah,
in West
I played
LA.
There. I played there actually quite a bit with a band I had called Checkered Past with Steve Jones from Pistols.
Okay.
Yeah, man. So so we're gonna go in this van tour. I'm sure you're familiar with the van tours there, Mike. So
a little bit.
So we're gonna go and do that. And right before that, there's a couple of Blondie gigs that we're doing. And Superman Says. It's an album called Now Hear This that we did a. Maybe about 2 years ago now, and it's one of the tracks on there. Yeah, Superman Says.
Can we go way back? What's your first memory of music?
First memory of music? Oh, wow. Probably my mom singing along to WMCA.
In the past.
AM radio. When I was...
YMCA?
No, WMCA.
I thought you told the village people.
No, WMCA was the good guys in New York. And every morning, she'd be making me my breakfast, and she'd be singing along to the top 40, you know. So,
So she's singing, but just for singing in the home, was she?
She played piano too. We always had a piano in the house. Yeah.
So you had music people in your family.
Yeah. My dad had a band with his brothers, like a wedding band type of thing.
What'd he play?
He was a drummer, actually.
He's a drummer, man.
My grandfather was accordion. Yeah.
And your grandfather's accordion.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
there was music in the family. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was music in the family, but you know, I mean, I remember really liking the Four Seasons a lot when I was a kid. The drummer, I can't think of his name. Seasons' greatest hits. It was great.
When they were New Jersey guys, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then when we were kids in school, that once the Beatles came out, the Greasers would be fighting with like I liked the Beatles once that happened, but the Greasers would fight. No, the Four Seasons are better than the Beatles. You know, they
had
the Beatles and all that. It was
a rivalry.
Yeah, you know, like the Greasers and the Rockers and stuff.
Teddies.
Well, they didn't call them.
No, but in England, Brighton.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mods.
Yeah, but Teddy Boy music is great, man. Rockabilly is greatest.
People might think they fight more over clothes.
Yeah, about their look. And yeah, they rode motorcycles and the mods rode scooters.
Because you kind of have real heavy things to fight
over. Well, everybody's the same. And, you know, they're all English, so they can't really start picking on their...
because Four Seasons are U.S. and Beatles are England, so you can get on that tip.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
That's true. But
do you remember the first record you got?
Geez, I'm trying to remember. I know. My mom bought me "I Want to Hold Your Hand" 45. I still have it.
Do you remember getting records at
drugstore? There wasn't really record stores?
Oh, my big thing was I'd go to the 5 and 10, to Woolworths.
5 and 10, right.
I had a record the other day that I was getting some people to sign, a Blondie Greatest Hits, and it had the edge cut off. And the guy that plays guitar...
in the corner? Band,
yeah.
That means it was a promo.
It's a cutout. Yeah, or a cutout.
And right? Ian Arvin would sell them back to
right. And this kid's looking at me, Tommy, who plays guitar with us now with Blondie, yeah. He's like, why is that edge cut off?
Because you don't know
that
era.
He doesn't know about any of that, right? Because to me, my version of success was having an album in the cutout bin at Woolworths, because that's where all the good records were. I'd go and get them 99 cents. I got all kinds of great stuff, you know, and soundtrack stuff, and, you know. All
so
the stuff
your mom got you your
stuff.
First record, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, the Beatles. 45.
Did you see them when they came?
Nah, I was too young.
What they play? Shea
Stadium, yeah.
Like with no PA? Oh, PA
well,
only for the singing?
They played Carnegie Hall first. The first
yeah,
time
but
they
I mean,
came.
They played at big place, yeah. And only the singing. I think the amps were like driving.
Yeah, and they were set up in the middle of the field.
So
you know,
the
with
power the
amps,
stadium.
Yeah, with like 50,000 people in a stadium.
And the screaming like drowned them out. Yeah
I mean, the PA thing, I mean, first time we played Vegas with Blondie, we played the Aladdin. It was the only place that had a theater. Everything else was like those Elvis Presley showrooms.
Right.
And
right.
I remember we used the house PA that was just like an address system, public address system. You know, we didn't even use a real PA. So
no kick drum going through that.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
Okay, so your pop's a drummer. Does he give you your first kit?
Yeah, you know what? There was a kit up in my grandma's attic that he had before.
What town is this?
It's called Bayonne, New Jersey, actually.
Okay, yeah. I've driven by there.
Yeah, man. It's exit 14A.
There's a bridge. They got their own bridge.
The Bayonne Bridge. Well, what were we talking about?
Oh, is there an island?
It's a peninsula.
Okay.
But actually...
Is there an island on the way of the bridges?
Staten Island.
Okay.
Staten Island is connected by the Bayonne Bridge.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't in New Jersey, it'd be another borough of New York City, actually. I mean, Brooklyn's on one side, yeah. Staten Island's on the other side. And then, you know, like Pedro...
Yeah.
Port Newark, Port
right.
Elizabeth. I mean, that's the same deal, you know. It's
a lot of
like
waterfront.
A lot of
docks.
Waterfront. So, yeah, so I grew up on the peninsula. But I remember that before my dad went in the service, he put the drums up in my grandma's attic, and I remember one day we went up and got him, and it was an old, like, I wish I still had him. I traded him in for a set like Dave Clark had, like a Roger set. But they were like, kind of like old Radio King big band drums. I wish
okay.
I still had them,
whoa.
But... I got a snare drum still from his stuff.
So that's the first kit you start playing on.
Yeah.
Now what do? Do you play along with records? Does some dude show you?
I took lessons for a while.
Okay.
I took lessons
you
for a while.
Remember the cat's name?
No.
Just
I actually
to give
don't. No, you know, I don't. That's kind of actually that's a kind of a blank space in my brain, funny enough.
But you're young, right?
Yeah,
how old?
Yeah, like 10.
10. So
yeah,
you're in
yeah.
grade school still.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the best part of the drum lessons were the last 10 minutes. You got to bring in a record and play along to the record.
Okay,
right?
Okay. So no rudiments, because that
well,
rest.
Yeah, first we played out of the book. You know, we're doing the rudiments.
Yeah,
rudiments. You know. And then, but the
I heard a weird rudiment story from it's Billy Cobham.
Yeah. His birthday was the other day.
Really? Because I think he was from like some drum corps scene.
Yeah, well, that's my
school.
Background. That was the next step for me. I was in drum corps, too.
He said they would do paradiddles the whole quarter. They start with quarters on the wall. Ball kit, huh?
Yeah.
Then go down to dimes. You're
yeah.
holding on with the beats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a little discipline. I heard when you look at his drum heads, there's one dot in the middle.
Well, yeah, well, that is something to be said for that, the consistency. Actually, my tech, Rick West, kind of points out that I do kind of hit the drum in the same place all the time. I never even think about it, but that's...
Well, you look at most drum hits.
Yeah. No, there is something about that, hitting it in the same place all at the same time.
So the drum corps thing was like a heavy...
I played, actually, rudimental bass, which I think Cobham also did for a while, and that means, you know, you've got a bass drum strapped on you, but you're playing all the rudiments with two giant sticks. You're not just playing the basic notes with
yeah.
one with a mallet. You're playing like a rudiments, like you'd be playing a snare drum, except you got giant clubs. I mean, I was kind of being mentored to do that more, because there was a cat that was the main rudimental bass drum guy, and I was a lot younger. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting.
You were like the protege.
Yeah. And, you know, I had to quit the drum corps when I had my first band, rock band in high school and all that. So.
Ah, so
because
you had to
we
make
were
the
gigging
choice.
Too. Yeah, I mean, because actually the drum corps thing, you know, like you get on a bus and go to, like, you know, to Baltimore or somewhere and compete in the,
sure.
you know, the drum and bugle corps competitions. So, But that was a good grounding for me and a good basis of like playing and actually get really build like endurance, because you're marching and playing drums and it's crazy.
Yeah, I heard about it. Also, horn guys with the little mouth pieces.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's why people like the bone, the big mouth. Because yeah. When you're walking, they're marching.
Oh yeah.
It's hard to hold that.
Yeah, right. No, there's a lot to it, you know. And
sousaphone came from that too, because it's so hard to hold the tuba.
Bass, yeah.
So the plastic.
Oh, they made it smaller. Yeah.
They're wrapped around you, kind of.
But the drum lessons, like I was saying, the last 10 minutes, you got to bring in a record. Usually, I'd bring in like a Beatles record or a Four Seasons record, but. Then I got the
Show
first.
Show me how to play this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, play a long time. But yeah. Then I got the first Who album. So all of a sudden, I'm in there trying to play along, trying to play the end of My Generation.
My right? Generation, also Happy Jack. That's
well, Happy Jack's not on the first. That's the second album.
Oh, is that the second
one? The first album is called The Who Sing My Generation.
Okay.
That's the album that has My Generation and the song The Ox. Ironically, it's called The Ox, which Entwistle.
It's his nickname.
Yeah, but it's basically Wipeout. It's Keith Moon's solo then, right? But
it's an instrumental.
Yeah, so it was really funny because you can imagine this, it wasn't like any kind of big sound
system.
Happy
Jack was after.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Happy Jack's second album. Yeah, Quick One While He's Away. Yeah.
You know how they sold them over here? They never came out. They were all monos in those days, and then they brought them out as a double album.
Yeah, they might have later on.
Yeah,
but I got the
Decca
first two albums when it
like
came
this.
Out. Yeah. There's a different cover in the States.
Different mixes, too. It's really trippy.
Yeah. The cover of the U.S., the Who Sings My Generation.
Is that Big Ben?
They're in front of Big Ben, but their faces... they're in front of Big Ben, but the cover of the English one has got those oil drums, where it's taken from like a camera's like over their heads, like the most flattering shot. Obviously, as you get older, you realize that they put the camera up, when you're doing selfies now with the fans, put the camera way up high and point it down.
You got
you know?
More chins than a Chinese
phone
book.
Right. So
what about this song here, Tinker Tailor?
Oh yeah, Tinker Tailor. Right. Well, the Yardbirds did that.
That's what I was going to say. There's some England.
And Terry Reid. Also, I think it's Terry Reid's song originally, if I'm not mistaken, but might not be. But and Keith Strain from the Fleshtones, he sings lead.
Remember
on
those
this
cats? Because the singer had
Peter
a show
Cerenko.
On the MTV.
Yeah, he's on Underground Garage now on Little Steven's station on Sirius now too. Yeah, Peter. I actually played on their first stuff way back when. Funny enough.
Wow,
because New York band.
They were in for a while.
Yeah, but they were a New York band, but they were on IRS.
That's right. We're in the backyard of the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, the boss is like the Police's drummer's pop or something.
We didn't know at the time.
They told us later we were in this mansion.
Oh yeah, yeah. Miles Copeland. Yeah.
Copeland. That's
yeah, Miles Copeland.
Let's listen to Tinker Tailor.
Yeah.
Tinker Tailor, There is a person I want to meet with. An untimely end. Once there were only a few big people, but now there's a small person, not small enough. Once only a small big people. Once only a few big people. But now a small one, a should be dead person, a small one. Who'll be a nice chap? Who'll point the nuzzle? Who'll remove this niggling blight from our otherwise roseate days and nights? This is no bleat by a king in a fuss about a becket. This is the calm removal of a wart. I'd do it if I didn't have other things to do. Someone do it. Something do it. I'd do it if I didn't have other things to do.
For Pedro Show, we had Tinker Taylor by the Split Squad. The name?
It's a baseball term.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I'd say it's kind of, there's another band that Peter Buck and Mike Mills from REM have called the Baseball Project.
I played with them in Austin.
Yeah, we actually did some gigs with them too.
And all the songs are about baseball.
All the songs sound like REM, except they're singing about baseball. They're a good, really good band. And Steve,
yeah, yeah.
And Steve Wynn also from Dream
right.
Syndicate is
yeah,
in that
right,
band
right.
too. Yeah, so I was just going to tell you about the end of my drum lesson. I just wanted to get to the end of that because you can imagine the record player that we were playing along to was not a big sound system. It was
yeah,
just
yeah.
a little thing. So I'm there trying to play the end of My Generation, like the Keith Moon stuff. And yeah, you can't even hear the record. And it's just kind of funny. And it's like, I don't think I still have it. To this day, I still can't get it right. But I'm still trying, you know.
Was Can't Explain the first single?
I think maybe in the U.S. it might have been, yeah.
I think it's before.
But I can't explain. I Can't Explain is not on the Who Sing My Generation album.
It was a single.
Yeah.
It comes out later with that DVD or something, some compilation.
Yeah, there used to be a tradition, I think, in England, especially like they wouldn't put the single on the album.
So you'd have to get both.
Yeah, but I guess that might have been the thought. But then you would think the album, the hit single, would promote the album too. But there was a tradition where if the single came out, the album was different. So, interesting, you know.
We also had Kill Mr. Brand New from Boris, mono vinyl version. Yeah, mono. I'm telling you, those old mixes were so much different.
Back to mono, yeah.
Wow.
Well,
yeah,
they say
believe that, going back to that?
They say the Beatles albums, if you listen to them in mono, those are the ones they were present for when they were mixing them.
Oh, is that right?
That's how they wanted it to sound.
Okay.
They weren't there when everything got, because that was later on, they changed it to stereo.
That's
supposedly.
Right. That's right. And then we had Strand the Banksters from Madrid doing Intervención o Rescate, Space Echo. Lemon Kittens with Untimely End, and finally Disciplina Kichwa with Tiz Naz Diz Zvova Zova Ima Sentiri Ugla.
Wow, man.
Serbian ain't that good, but this bass man, Kolya, you gotta check this cat out.
Somebody turned John to that?
I got to hang out with him.
Oh, wow.
He's like the Jimi Hendrix of bass. You wouldn't believe this
cat. What country is he in?
Serbia.
Oh, Serbia. Oh,
and
all
right. I played last year in Belgrade, he spent like 3-4 hours with me. This guy's a monster. It's got a lot of groove. He plays with really good drummers. And plays bass through Wow Wow with distortion. It's the most trippy sound.
Yeah.
He had a U.S. lady singing with him for a while. He's tried a bunch of things, but it's always Kolya. And he goes back to the late 70s. When it was called Yugoslavia.
Right.
Before the divorce.
Right.
Okay, you're talking about this band that you had to pick between high school and your band. So how did this band get started? Some cats from school?
Yeah.
Garage band?
Yeah, well, no, we're front room. We used to play in the
living room.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Hey, by the way, where did you crack your drums? Because that always was...
I'm in my mom and dad's house. They were cool with it. So my dad was a drummer.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Okay.
But, you know, once in a while they would get a little upset, but... No, you know, I got to say, you know, I always had support from my parents. I know, like, you know, they were a big, you know, we didn't have much, but we had a lot of love, I think, you know. It was good.
Yeah,
it was a good thing.
Navy Boom apartment guys, Navy houses. We always look for the drummers who had pads.
Yeah, right.
So we got Georgie because he had that shed.
Right.
Yeah, because
a
lot of dudes, especially apartments, they don't dig.
Yeah. But I mean,
especially
when I
upstairs,
you can't really do it. I was talking to
what was this band called?
The band was called Total Environment. Because we had a guy that did a light show. Actually, it's a guy called Ray Goodman I guess he was always an entrepreneur because he's the dude that owns Trash and Boardville in New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were kids.
This guy who works there, he came to all the studios.
Jimmy.
Shows. Jimmy.
Yeah, he's the biggest Iggy fan in the world.
On
he's got
stage.
The Ig tattoo. Yeah, Jimmy. But, we used to have we'd do, you know, church halls and bar mitzvahs and, you know, battle of the bands.
He was the light man? Who was the other cats? What was it, a quartet?
No, it was the thing that we had a really great keyboard player.
Okay.
And two guitars, bass, keyboards, and drums. And, that band, we actually played at Carnegie Hall, funny enough.
Damn!
Yeah.
Were you still a teenager?
I was like 14 years old. Funny.
No,
Well, that's going back to the radio. Cousin Bruce Morrow, you know Cousin Brucey?
No.
He was on WABC. He's still on the 60 station on Sirius now.
Okay.
He'd had a thing called Cousin Brucey's Big Break, right?
So he got the big break.
What you did was... You made a recording like on a cassette, mono cassette recording, and you sent it in, and if they liked what they heard, they put you in the studio. It was the first time I was ever in a professional studio. We were in ABC Studios, right? But I remember they put the amps in like a square and put one mic in the middle, and then they had like maybe two mics on the drums.
Overhead kick.
And we did a song called Something's Going On off the first Blood, Sweat, and Tears album, which is kind of jazzy. Right? And as I said, the keyboard player was really good. And it's a classic story that, funny enough, this one song that we happened to decide to do was one of the only songs that the lead guitar player sang, right, instead of the lead singer. So all of a sudden, the lead singer, who was the rhythm guitarist, all of a sudden, you know, he's in the back all pissed off. It's like out of a movie, right? Actually, there's a movie, Stardust, with David Essex. The same thing happens, right?
Oh,
They get David Essex.
Canned Heat.
Yeah, probably.
Now guy kind of took over.
So anyway, so then we did that recording, and then they play that on the radio, and then the public votes.
Whoa.
So we were in the 10 bands or so that got picked to do a live gig, right, for the Battle of the Bands. Usually they'd have it in the city in Manhattan, like at a ballroom, like at the Hilton or something, right? Because it was WABC, and Cousin Bruiser, he was a big deal.
Sure, sure.
So that year, for some reason, they go, oh, it's going to be at Carnegie Hall this year. I'm like, we're like, wow, are you kidding? So all of a sudden, we're 14 years old. We're there. I remember looking out at Carnegie Hall from, like, behind the curtain. I'm like, wow, this is, like, crazy. So I guess I started at the top, and it was all downhill from there, you know?
Was it set or just the one?
One song, okay. And we didn't win, and but it was quite an experience. And the funny thing about all of that, too, is I was kind of reiterating the story. I was doing an interview with Debbie Harry for the Blondie album, and we were up at ABC, and I just happened to mention, I go, you know, the last time I was in this studio, and I told that story, right? Was it more than a little? Well, it was only 14. I was about 21 when we were, so you know, it was a little, relatively speaking.
Oh, when you told the story, it wasn't that far away. Okay,
it really wasn't, because it was when we had the Blondie album out, the Parallel Lines album. I was only like in my early 20s then. So tell the story, and after we're done, this guy comes out of the door and he goes, oh, I was the engineer on that session, and here's a copy of the tape. Because I didn't have a copy.
Wow.
He gave me a reel-to-reel copy of the tape, WABC, so I have it. That was like such a great experience. But, so I had that band.
How long did that go?
That went for freshman and sophomore year of high school. Then my other 2 years, I had a band called the Sweet Willie Jam Band. We had two drummers.
Whoa.
Two drummers, and we used to do a lot of Santana and Allman Brothers. And then we'd throw in some other stuff like
Whipping Post.
And then we did, it was with the same keyboard. Yeah, we did Whipping Post. We did that stuff. Yeah, in memory of Elizabeth Reed. We did all that stuff.
Because they had two drummers.
What's the big song?
Allman Brothers had the two.
What's the big song from Woodstock that the Soul Sacrifice? Santana, we did that one. Yeah, because
they had a percussion in a drum.
Yeah, but what we would do is like one drummer would be playing like on the toms and all,
sure,
that, somebody
sure.
be playing the beat. Or if we did Allman Brothers, we get into that sync. My background in drumming, I look back between the drum and bugle corps, and you know, a drummer, I was lucky to play with a lot of good musicians when I was young, and that really is a big help.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like when I was talking about when I started playing with Nancy Sinatra, I realized, wow, all these other cats, like Don Randy, who owns the Baked Potato in L.A., and he's in the Wrecking Crew, like, and all the other musicians, I go, well, they're like really, really good, and I'm playing with them, it was making me better. So,
Which is opposite. Some people, they want to have like lamers around them so they look good.
No, drummers, the better the musicians you play with, you're going to learn. Ears open, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're always
going to
learn.
You.
I mean, that's the thing about music, you're always learning something. I learned stuff from you just playing, working with you last couple of weeks. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Which is why we're here in New York, right? It's hearing sirens. Probably don't usually get the sirens when you're podcasting, right?
We get the Harleys.
Harleys.
On the weekends, they like to do the
And the foghorns, the horns.
We get that
tug
all the
horns,
time, right,
yeah.
right. And tugboats.
Tugboats,
they do the pipe.
Beep, right. Beep, oh, yeah, like beep. That, yeah.
Even though they got the radios, they still use the pipes.
Yeah.
Okay, so total environment.
Sweet Willie Jam
Sweet
Band.
Sweet Willie Jam Band.
Yeah. Well, then after that, I was in a, I was kind of in a prog band.
You're just trying it
all. My first, it was called Rondo Hutton, which is a really obscure, I think, B-movie actor that the synthesizer player liked.
Okay.
And that was kind of, and then also, that was short-lived. Then I had my glam rock band.
Okay.
Sweet Revenge, and that's where I was playing at a place called Club 82 in New York City, 82 East 4th Street.
Okay.
And that's where like the New York Dolls played, and like Wayne County.
Oh wow.
And Tom Verlaine had a band called the Neon Boys, and
okay.
Lenny Kaye and Tommy Ramone, all these people would hang out there. And
this
then,
is before the CB.
Yeah, well this is the whole deal.
Okay.
Ironically, the Club 82, that was like a glam rock scene, but there were a lot of the people that wound up on the CBGB scene. Basically, but also kept people like Lou Reed and David Bowie would be hanging out there too. It was like the height of glam rock. But basically, all of a sudden, everybody kind of cut their hair, took their platform shoes off, put their sneakers on, walked around the corner, and guess what was around the corner? 313 Bowery, CBGB.
Okay, so it wasn't even physically that far.
No, it was not
at
all.
What was the pad itself like? Was it Beat?
Club 82?
Yeah.
Or CB's?
I know CB's.
No, Club 82 was basically there was a woman at the door by the name of Tommy in a white T-shirt with a pack of Camels rolled up with a DA haircut.
Right here.
DA haircut, and it was basically a gay bar, mixed gay bar. But one night a week they had rock and roll, and they had the bandstand was you see it. I think at the Metropole uptown too, where Gene Krupa used to play. They had these showrooms where the bar was in front of the stage. Yeah. Or like stripper bars, like when you went, like a strip club.
Congress used to do that in Tucson, where the bars were.
Yeah. So that's what a band stage set up behind the bar.
Yeah.
And they had like mirrors, and then the whole thing was, the only time you heard rock in there was when, like, the New York Dolls or Wayne County or somebody would be playing. All the rest of the time it was dance music. But really good dance music, like, you know, like guys actually playing, not like computer dance music, you know, like Shame, Shame, Shame.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, Shake Your Booty, all this stuff.
Sweet Revenge, they record?
I don't think we ever did record, actually.
So it's just gig band.
Oh, wait. No, we recorded, but we never released anything.
Okay.
But our big song was called Fuck the World. And this is before punk rock.
Okay. Andy told me it was hard to play in this town.
Yeah.
There was hardly any pads. If you didn't do covers, it was hard to play. He was telling me about Dictator Days.
Yeah, well, then they played at Coventry in Queens.
That's where Kiss played.
Yeah, that's where Kiss played. And then Joey Ramone, he had like a glam rock band when he was known as Jeff Starship. He used to play at Coventry.
Jeff Starship,
yeah. Because he used to be at CBGB's. Then when he was on stage with the Ramones, people were going, wait a minute, that's Jeff Starship. It was like his Ziggy Stardust kind of thing that he had going.
And Tommy and Johnny had a band in high school or something, right?
Yeah, Tangerine Puppets.
That's a bad name.
The lead singer was actually, he's an agent. He was like an agent for Hugh Cornwell for a while.
The Strangler guy.
Yeah, because I played with Hugh Cornwell too over the years. The Tangerine Puppets. Yeah.
Right at the end of the first hour, May 18th, 2016. This is Wife Peter, so hold tight for hour two. May 18th, 2016. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro show. Every day.
just doing my time. Wish that I could be set free. Would it really make you believe? Slowly, you got me so good at me. Slowly, got me so good at me. Slowly, you got me so good. I feel so deep. Slowly, you got me so good. I feel so deep.
Tennessee. Things seldom move as majestically as planned, but I was born with a decent hand, and I played the cards well. Now over the Hudson westward we were shocked. The city turns out to be smaller than a fantasy. It's these lost little towns that make the heart swell. To come up southern is a troubled way. Pay no mind to what the writers say. It's Italian that makes it lyrical. A kid swears to God there's gonna be a change, but do people and places ever really change in the ancient times? They call that a miracle. The ground shook, the slag and the clay in the Jersey fields gave way to the soft wooded trees, the pines, poplars, and the hickories. Old friends of my childhood, there in the care of the Brothers of the Holy Cross, to our hero of 10 years old, a terrible thought takes hold, that the land at his feet is steeped in wild blood. I was the fireflies around the lamps as the day softly pales, and this hour would revive, get down the details. Who would describe that summer 15? Would have to dream. The only way is to dream. And what of the dreams of the wretched, broken and on their knees? So help me God, I'm from the south is a hard way. Pay no mind to what the writers say. It's a telling that makes it lyrical. Nothing to lose, they say, but your chains. But suffering people don't just come unchained. In the ancient times, that was called a miracle.
Space. Anything.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with another one of your sideshows.
Right.
I See No Way Out by the Empty Hearts. Weatherman Lied Today, GG Band. It Ain't Pretty, Negative Example. Inconstantina by Rudy OMM. They're out of Brazil. Very Be Careful, Aloma. They're SoCal, accordion rock. And, but it ain't Norteña, it's Valentano. It says Colombia, I got corrected. Yeah, I think, I said, so can we think if they speak Spanish? That's all.
Yeah, well, there's all different dialects, you know. And all
totally,
that. Yeah,
totally,
yeah.
But, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I'm learning, I'm slow learning. Oh, yeah, best band name ever, Entertainment Law.
That's a good name.
With Foolish Man, Joe Brewer with Double Vision, and finally, Howie Reeve. Brand new Antenna Gone Haywire. He just does the solo bass guitar and sings.
Wow.
Not stand up, but these kind, you know, on your lap.
Well, it's great to have the bands that I'm working with in, you know, on the show with all this really great world music and, you know, turning people on to different things. It's really great, you know.
I think music's music.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's great.
We got this thing where people are connected now,
mm-hmm.
So I get provincial.
Sure.
Like, bring it on. What about the Lonely Hearts? Because you told us about Split Squad.
Yeah, the Empty Hearts.
Empty Hearts, sorry.
Yeah, the Lonely Hearts. That's the Lonely Hearts Club, right? There's all kinds of hearts. There's Heart, there's the Empty Hearts, there's the Lonely Hearts, there's the... I saw a band, there's the Drunken
Heart.
Hearts. There's Heart, there's the Black Hearts, Joan Jett.
Black Hearts, yeah.
But anyway, the Empty Hearts, Steve Van Zandt came up with that name for us because he was kind of a patron of ours early on. And, you know, the Empty Hearts is the band that I'm really focused on now, aside from the Blondie stuff. But
I've got Elliot.
Elliot Easton from The Cars, a guy called Andy Babuke from the Chesterfield Kings, also an author.
Weren't they upstate here?
Yeah, Rochester.
There was a good guitar store up there.
Yeah, House of Guitars.
But Guitar.
Andy has his own shop now in Rochester called Fab Gear.
Okay.
Which is a really great little guitar store. He's got just great stuff. And a guy called Wally Palmer, who's the lead singer in the Romantics, What I Like About You Guys.
Detroit, right?
Detroit guy. And I played with the Romantics for about 10 years.
Oh, they could say their drummer man had a distinctive look.
Yeah, Jimmy, yeah.
Big hair.
Yeah.
Red leather. I remember the Cleveland used to have this Agora.
Yeah, the Agora.
Upstairs.
I played
but downstairs
Agora, yeah.
Was the Pop Shop or something. They had a little pad.
Okay.
And us and Flag were playing there. And they were upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
But I come in the head to piss, you know, and the dude was fixing up in the mirror.
Yeah, the hairspray.
And then he looked over and he's like, you know, that's showbiz. I didn't, I wasn't spying, you know, it just happened.
Yeah, no, Jimmy.
Same thing happened with Tito from the Plugs.
Oh, yeah.
He had like the dingleberry hat. And the same thing, I'd walk into the head and he's in the mirror and he looked around and he goes, that's showbiz. I couldn't believe it. It was almost like the same fucking voice. And he's a Latin guy.
Yeah, well, I did a gig with Eddie Money the other day, actually, with the Empty Hearts at the Malibu Guitar Festival, actually, the second annual. They're going to keep it going. It was a lot of acts. But Eddie Money, who we played with, right? No, he's in New York. He was a New York cop. Eddie
Mahoney.
Oh,
that's right. It was New York cop.
But he was about to go on, and I was standing around. I know Eddie from over the years, and he just goes, business as usual, put the girdle on, sock down the pants, and here we go.
two tickets to Paradise. That was his tune, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
A couple other ones. He's got that track with Ronnie Spector. Just like Ronnie says, what's it called? He does a duet with Ronnie Spector. It's really good. But, so the Empty Hearts.
Did you guys record?
We have an album out on Fortune 9 Records, which is a part of the Universal Music Group, and... you know, it's very inspired by the 60s British invasion and the roots of rock and roll, like Chuck Berry and Little Richard and things like that. And, you know, we all collaborated on the songs. There were all the four of us had a lot of input. And really, really proud of the record. And it's an ongoing thing. We're going to do some more shows in October. We went to Japan with that. And the Empty Hearts, you know, I really feel as though it's a special band because we play a unique kind of music that's not really played by... There's so many different influences and, you know, in music nowadays and third world music and all. We play a real, what I would call, real traditional rock and roll.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of rock bands out there, but we're a rock and roll band. And you know, Elliot Easton from the Cars, a great guitar player.
Right, right.
And the album was co-produced by us and a guy called Ed Stasium, who produced the Ramones and Smithereens. Actually, he's done a lot of great stuff over the years, and he did a lot of behind-the-scenes work with the Ramones, recording-wise. And
what about this tune here?
I was just going to say,
Soul Deep.
Soul Deep, yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, some kind of really cool drums on it. I really like that, and, you know.
So you could bring in stuff, and then they play to you.
Yeah, no, we just kind of jammed on the songs and kind of created them in the room like old school, really.
Right,
know?
Right.
Yeah, Soul Deep is another song that I really, really like, a really great, you know, rocking song. But I was just going to say, and Ian McLagan from the Faces and the Small Faces plays keyboards on the album.
He was living in Austin, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, he's Ian, you know, Mac, yeah, passed. It's just the anniversary, actually. It was sudden and a real shock, and I can't believe that. We got him to play on the record, and then all of a sudden he was gone. So,
at least he got.
Yeah, I mean, no, it was a big deal for us to get him on the record.
Okay, let's listen.
Yeah, Soul Deep.
Thank you. How do you feel about the last gig here at Black Betty?
It's a lot of pressure to excel.
Well, I think with the drinks, we'll be doing okay.
We'll be right back. The waitress makes me want to take a second look. Fair hair and a great customer service. Curly brown hair, raw bone and rosy cheeks. A looker in a way. Charmed, I am sure. I feel like an old man, though. Slower, but still having fun. Something I would appreciate, a certain look from a woman. The attention of someone. I wonder what kind of life she has. With the uniform tossed aside and the hair finally down. What kind of woman would be non-judgmental and welcome my lack of experience? Let us look again at women. And I love my pine cone waitresses. I am so independent, but I like you. You carry me around in a certain sort of way, but I'm always... I'm old. So it is all very cool to justify someone's existence by appreciating them as you can. You just made me think again.
I just had, well, they went down a treat, kind of.
For Pedro Show, Soul Deep, Empty Hearts, Voyage to Arctica, Steve McKay and Radon and Sambo, another cat left too early.
Yeah.
I was just Steve about McKay, to record with him. Yeah.
Great saxophone player.
Yeah, beautiful guy. I served a long time with him. The Freaks with Ivana, Robbie Fulks, A Miracle, Pale Blue Dot by Slack Rope Walkers, and finally, Super Pitch with Iowa. What happened after Sweet Revenge?
Oh, after Sweet Revenge. Well, actually, quit Sweet Revenge to hook up with the early members of Blondie. And
how'd that happen?
Well, actually, I was the Club 82. Chris Stein and Debbie Harry had a band called the Stilettos, and they would play at like opening for the New York Dolls and things like that at Club 82. And Sweet Revenge were playing there, you know, in the Dolls, as I was saying. All that stuff. So that was, everyone was in that kind of glam rock milieu kind of thing that was kind of, I guess, fading out. Although, you know, like people like Lou and Bowie, obviously they informed what I would call the punk, the New York scene, the New York punk rock scene. But, you know, we never called it ourselves punks. And, you know, like my thing, there was never any T-shirts at CBGB when we played there, you know.
What
there's
about
no
such
Max's? Max's, yeah, we played
Abby
at Max's.
Was telling me about these four gigs the Stooges did it. Max.
Yeah, I didn't see those shows. I mean, also, you know,
he said there was 150 people, but like he said, that was most of the scene.
Yeah. So oh yeah. Yeah, the scene was maybe made up about 100 people, 150
and it was,
people.
A lot of those dudes were in bands.
It was mostly
bands.
It was
almost like taking turns playing
and,
for
and
each other.
Not too many women initially. You know, that was kind of like with Patty and Debbie and Tina Weymouth. As far as the musicians, they kind of really stood out as women performers. And then, you know, people like Sable Starr and Nancy Spungen were like kind of only chicks around, really, like hanging out. They were all cool.
Which,
you know,
Hollywood scene was different. There was a lot of women in the old punk.
Yeah.
Well, we called it punk because you guys are before.
Yeah, we never really called it, you know, punk rock. It was kind of just a bohemian, you know, influenced by, you know, Burroughs and by, like I was saying, by Lou Reed and things like that.
He was living in town there, right?
Yeah, he just lived down the street here.
It was called the Bunker.
Yeah, yeah, right on the Bowery. Yeah, the Bunker. Yeah.
They had to get him to Kansas because
right,
he was getting a little too happy. Right?
Yeah.
So,
but
do you remember the first gig you did with those guys? With Blondie?
Yeah, we the first gig I did.
You told me you brought in the bass man, right?
Yeah. Well, but the first gigs we did was at CBGB's, and Fred Smith, who's in television, the bass player, was playing. And in between the first show and the second show, he quit. And that was like the first time, the first gigs that we did. Well, because he was going to join television. He was asked to join television.
Richard Hell quit. I heard Dee Dee tried out for television.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. But I know he might have tried out on guitar, though, not bass. Or maybe after. So, but Fred Smith's a really great bass player.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, so then we kind of had to regroup, which is when I brought in my friend, my high school friend, Gary Valentine. And,
which I saw with the No.
Yeah.
Opening
he had a band
Spring.
Called the No, yeah.
The Whiskey.
And then when we got Gary, we were playing at this place on 13th and 3rd called Monty Python's Bar. It was just like we set up on the floor. And then there was a place in the Wall Street area called White's Pub where Debbie was a bartender. She wore a bikini and was a bartender there. And we'd play there like at happy hour.
Between her shifts.
Yeah, well, she could get us gigs there, you know. So we'd play
sure,
there.
Sure, sure.
We'd play there
and
like at happy
hour.
You
said it was hard to play here.
Yeah.
If you didn't do covers.
Yeah, so, you know, we did some gigs like that. And then when we were playing at Monty Python's, some people were in there and they go, do you want to play at this party we're having in our brownstone uptown for the equestrian show?
Horses.
We're like, what? What are you talking? You know, these were uptown folks, and all of a sudden, what are you guys doing on 13th and 3rd? I mean, back then,
it was
you know, I mean, that's where Scorsese did the film, the, you know, Taxi Driver, the scenes where with Jodie Foster outside the tenement. That's 13th and 3rd. So they go, we want to give you guys this gig. We want you to play, but make sure of one thing. We go, what's that? Make sure the singer wears those boots. I guess, man, I don't know if it was because of the equestrian thing, but Debbie had some boots on. They wanted her to say, make sure she wears those boots.
Okay,
so
we're
we played
hour.
There, you know.
Well, for Pedro Show, May 16th, 18th, 2016. Hold tight for hour three. May 18th, 2016 is third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Tell you. doesn't make no sense. Lost and broken, catchword spoken, forcing an open. Right to an omen, can't make the rope and hangman's broken. Miseries, I tell the bees, what more can I do? Trembling knees, I aim to please, what more can I do? Televised, pack of lies, what more can I do?
Open, pray to an omen, can't make the rope and hang. Those old Winnebago men knew what they were singing.
Those old Winnebago men knew what they were singing.
All summer long and all long.
All summer long and all along. I found a way to sit on a railroad tie above the sewer main.
I had found a way to sit on a railroad tie above the sewer main.
It spilled a shining waterfall out of a pipe. Somebody had gouged through the slanted earth. 14,100 more or less people in Maumee, my home, my native country.
Quickened the river with the speed of light.
Speed of light.
And the light caught there the solid speed of their lives.
And the light caught there the solid speed of their lives. In the instant of that waterfall.
I know what we call it most of the time.
I know what we call it most of the time.
But I have my own song for it.
But I have my own song.
Sometimes even today. I call it beauty.
And sometimes, even today, I call it beauty. I call it beauty.
For Pedro Show, let's start the third hour off with Fool's Holiday, International Swingers.
Right. That's another one of my side shows.
Right.
You know, as a drummer, you know, I really like to keep playing, and I really don't really practice on my own that much, so I like to surround myself with other players.
Yeah.
You know, in this band, this International Swingers, another friend of mine, Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols, is in it playing bass. And it was actually really a group of friends. The singer called Gary Twin was in this band called Supernaut in Australia and had a couple of hit records when he was all about 18 Supernaut. Years old.
There's a Black Sabbath song called that.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. They were kind of like
Volume 4, it's got big glisses. I found out he wrote most of the words. Ozzy didn't write any of the words.
Oh, yeah, Geezer. Yeah, he's a songwriter. He's kind of like...
And I think he lives in SoCal now.
Yeah, like Neil Peart in Rush.
He wrote all their words.
Yeah.
So, Australian guy...
Yeah, so he had an opportunity to go to Australia to do some shows. Some promoter offered him some shows. So instead of going in his own right, we put this band together and we went over and basically we're a covers band, bar band, doing, you know, Pistols songs and Blondie songs and some songs by his band, Supernaut. And then the guitarist is a guy called James Stevenson, who was the original guitar player in that punk rock band Chelsea. From the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right to Work.
Right to Work.
What was that guy's name? Gene?
Gene,
I remember that
Gene,
band.
Gene,
really old days, like 70s.
Oh, yeah, they were one of the original bands. They played at the Roxy in Soho. That was kind of the beginning of where punk rock kind of started.
Right, right.
Gene October.
That's his name.
The guy's name, yeah. No, they were the original punk bands, actually. And, you know, James has just been on tour. We're doing this thing called Holy Holy with Tony Visconti, you know, wow. David Bowie's producer.
The bass
and,
man.
Yeah, and Woody Woodmansey playing drums.
He lives upstate, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like Woodstock area or something?
Yeah, so the four of us went over to Australia. We had some fun. And then, you know, we decided we were basically a covers band, but we were covering our own songs.
Okay. And, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, so... So then one thing led to another. We once again collaborated on a bunch of material over a couple of years, and we have an album that's just coming out now too, the International Swingers album. You can get you know, on iTunes.
Who named the band?
Actually, the promoter that brought us over, because we couldn't think of a name like right on that kind of made sense to anyone, and we kind of figured everyone was traveling all over the place, people coming from England, and so it kind of made sense. It's funny though, when you Google it, a lot of times the first thing you get is like a, you know, like a swingers like sex you know website. It's really funny.
Spouses.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, but I think the name's kind of cool. You know, it has a sense of humor about it, and you know, we're actually got some gigs coming up with the International Swingers in L.A. and
so all three side shows, they're going.
Yeah, plus I've got Blondie as well, you know.
Right, right.
It's a lot of emails. But that kind of gets crazy.
You don't call Blondie a sideshow so much.
No, that's my day job.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been my day job for about 40 years, so.
40 years now, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I don't know, you couldn't really predict that. I mean, you know, I mean, the Stones kind of, you know, they were the ones, they were kind of like always comparing themselves. So, well, the blues guys keep going, why
yeah,
can't
right,
we?
Right.
So, but now,
Elvin
you know.
Jones, I saw him, there was the oxygen, Keiko had the oxygen tank.
Yeah, yeah, Earl Palmer.
Going out playing.
Earl Palmer was, had the oxygen going in his later years. But, you know, like rock and roll is beyond middle age, you know, and so were the players. You know, that's just the way it goes, you know. I mean, I was born in like 1950, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So,
and then it inherits other traditions too, like you were saying, blues,
yeah,
vaudeville,
yeah, yeah,
work in the towns,
yeah.
Feel the same about you, Split Squad.
Oh yeah, that's a good song. Yeah, that's kind of like a pop song. I mean, probably people kind of pick up on with me is I kind of really like bubblegum music. I like the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. I like the Ohio Express. I mean, the Ramones. I mean, massive influence on the Ramones was. You know, like the bubblegum music, you know, of the late, early 70s,
well, you
late
60s. Got the melody,
60s.
You got the bridge.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know.
Not so much blues.
No, not a lot of blues music. No, the Ramones, I don't think they're antithesis of blues, you know. I don't think they use any blues chords or anything. I think I was reading one of the recent magazines with the big story about the Ramones because of the anniversary on the cover and said part of their kind of manifest was that there wasn't going to be any kind of blues music in it.
Wow, you they know, talked about it.
Yeah, they kind of said the things that they weren't going to be influenced by.
You did two gigs with them, right?
I did play with the Ramones. I did two gigs, yeah.
And what'd you talk about? You didn't prac though, right? Johnny wouldn't prac with you.
Well, I did it was trial by fire. We didn't practice. We never... Put
and
the
then
show
the albums
together.
Are like at a whole different speed than the gig.
Yeah, I mean, when the whole thing came up about me playing with the Ramones, I kind of prefaced it by saying I didn't want to do it as a full-time thing, that I would have filled in. And then, you know, yeah. And then really after kind of hanging around with Joey a bit more, I was like, you know, we were friends. I was thinking, oh, this might be kind of a cool thing to do. And... I guess in some people's opinions, the gigs didn't go very well. If you listen to the gigs on the internet, they sound fine. You know, there's a couple of mistakes at the ends of songs and things. But
one of my drummer guys, Bob Lee, saw the Trenton
right.
gig, and he thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it was good. I mean, to be honest...
What was that pad called? City Gardens.
City Gardens and, John, what's the guy, you know? Jeez, I can't think of his last name that did... The political comedian, a TV show, he just left, John Stewart. He was the bartender at City Gardens.
Wow.
I did the John Stewart show last year with Blondie, and we were reminiscing about that he was actually at that show. And, you know, it was kind of just really lot of pandemonium at Ramon shows then, and everybody was out of their minds. And I mean, it's been documented, you know, like they didn't get along, you know.
Oh, Johnny and Joey
didn't speak,
talk.
And it was, you know, I think that created a lot of stress within the camp, but the Ramones camp in general,
you know,
by the way, none of them are around anymore, so.
Yeah, rest in peace.
And, you know, Dee Dee was in the band then, too, you know. Dee Dee, you know, he's like almost like an idiot savant, no, he's a painter, writer.
He said the exact same thing last night.
Can't tell if he was putting it on or not, but I guess I don't think he was. I think he was bipolar.
Times I talked to him, it seemed like he was trying to get it together, man.
Yeah.
And
no, he definitely.
Yeah,
I mean,
Marty Feldman eyes, but like he's like trying to communicate with me, and I was like, he had a rap thing going.
Yeah, Dee Dee King. Yeah, I have that album. It's not very good.
It was a trippy gig. It was a benefit. Some a couple of the ladies from Heart, Carlos Alomar was with some guys, and
oh, you played at it as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, it was a bill.
Oh, where was that?
It was here.
Oh, wow. And he did his rap thing? Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, I ran into Dee Dee in Royal Oak, Michigan when he was living in the Detroit area, and they literally had to run him out of town. They kind of told him to get out of town, you know?
He ended up
he had that
in Cali.
Period, yeah. I saw him like a week before he passed, you know, that he was supposed to be doing a gig at on Sunset Strip. Like right before he died, his name was up in lights. What was the club where Gazzara's used to be?
Key Club.
The Key Club. He was playing the Key Club that weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tragic.
I mean, I used to see him around L.A.
He wrote some good songs.
Oh, yeah. Dee Dee was great. I mean, the Ramones, you know, I compare the Ramones to the Beatles. I mean, as far as influence.
And the name is from the bass. Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney, one of his names he had when he wanted to have an exotic last name, I guess, back when. But, okay. I mean, the influence of the Ramones, you know, can't be underestimated. And then when you really get into their tunes, you know, people think it's easy, but it's not.
No.
I know that firsthand from trying to... Johnny wanted me to just go and play that stuff without ever practicing with the band. I mean, I had to go over the material at home, but it's... You got to get with the chemistry and with...
Yeah.
Just like the human touch, you know, of the band. I mean, the Ramones were a real band. I mean, they all had the same last name. They really did have a unified, you know, image that was all about what it's like to be in a band. No one person is supposed to really stand out in a way, you know, it was the Ramones. I mean, I always think the thing that caught me with the Beatles was everybody was a star. I think, like, before the Beatles, you know, most of it was like a singer out front and a band was backing him up.
Right.
Or Buddy Holly and the Crickets or Little Richard or...
Yeah.
But with the Beatles, you know, each person was featured in their own way. And, you know, that was kind of like what the Ramones were about, too. You know, you know, the original band was an amazing band. I mean...
Who was kind of like that?
The Who. Yeah, the
Stu
Who
was a
well.
Monster.
Yeah, yeah.
With what he did, he could do it.
Yeah.
But come together to make the band.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no.
They can play the songs, but it's never going to be like that.
Yeah, it's not the same, yeah.
Okay, but let's listen to Feel the Same About You.
Oh, okay, Feel the Same. Well, we're talking about, yeah, the Split Squad again. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. all each other. We are. We are. We are. We are strong. And we. And we. And we have the faith.
likes you.
Far away, it seems.
Watt for Pedro Show. Feel the same about you, Split Squad. The Nowhere Girl, Pop Group, Mystic Guy, Softest, Testament Zero, Yurt, Funky Brother, Tokyo Savannah, and finally Mario DeSandro with Lessons Learned. People ask you about this racket music stuff.
Yeah.
What music advice do you get asked by younger?
Yeah.
It's just coming in.
I mean, you know, I mean, obviously you got to do it for the love of it, you know. I mean, that's where it all starts. It's all about the music. It's, you know, you're going to get rich and famous. I mean, it's obviously a crapshoot, and very few people do. To be able to make a living as a musician, you know, as I consider myself to be a working musician, you know, that in itself is a major achievement.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of different ways to earn a living in the music business nowadays, you know, and, you know, whether you start your own record company or when you get a, you know, a commercial or something, but to have a career is kind of a difficult thing, and you got to love it, and you got to do it for the music, and everything else will follow. I never really, if you can avoid signing any kind of heavy contracts, you know, don't give your publishing away.
Yeah.
All those things.
Autonomy.
Yeah, be autonomous if you possibly can, but if you're working within a group,
yeah,
just by the nature of the beast, you're not autonomous. You're involved with other people.
Sure.
And a drummer, you know, just keep your ears open and be open to whatever, you know, the principal songwriter, let's say, or if you're collaborating, be open to other people's ideas.
What about drum machines?
You know, I mean, I had a hit record. We were one of the first ones to have a hit record with the drum machine, Heart of Glass.
Yeah.
You know, if you use it as a tool, as another instrument, it's fine. But I mean, I hate to say it, but I do consider myself to be a bit of a dinosaur nowadays. You
no.
know, like the drumming thing, the live, I mean, to me, you know, the one thing you can't replace is a great band playing live in concert, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you have to be there, you know, to be part of that. I mean, everything else, yeah, you know. You know, you press a button and you can make music, but I mean, I go back to the history of, you know, like Earl Palmer and you know, Elvin Jones and Billy Cobham and Keith Moon and people, to see a drummer that is really giving off such a fantastic energy and such a great vibe, you know, that's irreplaceable. And, you know, it's not to be taken for granted. You know, you really have to keep your ears open and be open to, if you're working within a group, you got to be open to other people's ideas and not kind of shut people down too quickly on things, you know. Just have a real optimism and be able to deal with rejection too, you know.
Roll with it. There's hills, there's valleys.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing a record with Towns, and all of a sudden one day he decided to shut it down.
Pete Towns.
Yeah. Did a record called, an album called White City. I'm on a couple of tracks. But once I got that call to go into England and work with Pete, I was like, this is it, you know. And then all of a sudden it got shut down for whatever reason, and the album came out a couple of years later with
is
a lot of other
where
people.
Is that the one where he didn't play guitar?
No, he played. It was
one where he had just a.
No,
but
this was actually Pete had gone through.
Oh, Face to Face or something.
Face. That song is on there. Well, he had a band together. Pete Town. He put a band together after where he did do that.
Yeah, but he didn't play guitar. He had like a
baton.
Conductor.
Baton. Yeah. But actually, the bass player in that band, a guy called Choo Choo Michon, played with me in Eurythmics. Because I look back. I guess I've done a lot of things, and so you know, that I'm proud of. But yeah, I mean, the Ramones. I did those couple of gigs, and then I wasn't in the Ramones anymore. You know, I auditioned for Patti Smith way back when. I didn't get that gig. I auditioned for Bob Dylan about two or three times over the years.
Wow.
Had some great jams, but never got the gig. And you know, but then there's a lot of, you know, gigs that I have gotten, and you know, you just gotta have respect for your other musicians and mutual respect for people you're doing business with, because it is a business, show business, right? So if you think you're gonna make it, if it's not a hobby, if it's a career, it's you gotta be taken a little more seriously in some ways. You know, I mean, I did my share of drugs and that, but I never kind of got out of control, you know. A lot of people did, and a lot of people aren't here anymore because of it. So, you know, you got to have a strong constitution, right, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Clem, I want to thank you so much for being
on
the show.
Thank you, Watt. Thank you. Peace and love to everyone out there in the world. And look for... actually, the new Blondie record, Gratuitous.
And some sideshow.
Gratuitous plug, a new Blondie record coming in 2017. Okay. And then all the other stuff that we've talked about. So thanks a lot.
Sure. It's been May 18th, 2016, Dishwap Peter Show. Everybody, keep your powder dry.